Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Wedding Network podcast. I am personally thrilled to have Michelle Schwartz on the call today because she is someone that I have known for quite a number of years, being fellow Austin event professionals. I do not remember the first time I met her, but I just know she's always been around and she's always been a joy to hang out with and be a part of the community. So I'm excited to dive in this call and excited for Michelle to and Cherie to get to know each other because they haven't officially met until today. So turn it over to Cherie and then Michelle.
Hi, everybody. I'm excited to be here with Michelle today. And of course, Jason, this is what you don't know is this is our fourth podcast of the day. So if we sound a little tripping over our tongues, that's why. But having Michelle on board is really exciting because she has a niche market that you need to be aware of. And I think that for all of us in the wedding industry, when we can hone in on that way, people say, oh, who's your perfect client and all of that sort of thing. But it's more to me, it's a niche that we surround ourselves with. It's a niche that really speaks to who we are as a person and a professional and speaks to our heart. So Michelle sort of fits all of that. And I'm going to let her talk to you about that today. And of course, we'll be bombarding her with many questions. So Michelle, thanks for joining us.
Oh, you are very sweet to say all that. Thank you so much for having me. I too am excited because, again, anything that Freshly is a part of, Jason, for those of you who don't know the nickname, is always exciting for me to get to be a part of because I soak up his wisdom and ideas whenever I can. So this is very fun for me too.
Let's get a little bit of a background on you and how you got your start in the wedding business and what your focus has been and where that niche marketing comes into play.
Okay. Well, the abbreviated version is I got my event start at Walt Disney World working in the resorts division, which is the hotels. And this was very early on, dating myself. It was in the early 90s before Disney weddings existed. And so there really wasn't a place for wedding couples and wedding events to live. So it kind of lived at the front desk of the Grand Floridian because that was the hotel everybody wanted to get married at, which is why the wedding pavilion is now right there, built in the same theming. So that's how I got my start and events and weddings. And then when I decided it was time for me to leave Disney to return back to Texas and be closer to the family, I landed in a being kind of the venue manager or the on-site venue coordinator at a major Jewish congregation. And we actually had three different spaces, reception spaces that I managed, and also two worship spaces. So I was responsible for assigning the bar and bat mitzvah dates. And I was kind of the liaison between all of the vendors and the families, and then the rabbinic staff and the families for every potential life cycle event. So that would be weddings, but bar and bat mitzvah, baby namings, even funerals or what we call shiva minyans. So I did all of that for several years. And so that just kind of landed me in the perfect combination to start what is now the blog, which is the niche, which is called the Modern Jewish Wedding. And it serves to, for couples, for inspiration. I liken it to the Style Me Pretty for the Jewish bride or groom or couple. And it also educates wedding vendors and partners and creative people on how to market to that demographic and a lot about Jewish traditions and vocabulary and hopefully a lot of what everybody needs to know to perform a lovely Jewish wedding.
And that blog is something I've definitely used as a resource and have watched it grow over time. And clearly the niche marketing that you talk about is the Jewish section of the wedding business and event business. And maybe we can talk just a little bit more about that and how there is a unique aspect to working with it and working within the traditions.
Well, I actually don't know a lot about Christian weddings or weddings that aren't Jewish. And by Jewish, I also refer to those as interfaith. So actually more than 50% of what I call, and I'm using air quotes here, Jewish weddings are really interfaith, with one of the people under the chuppah, not a parent, but one of the people under the chuppah being Jewish and the other being some other faith other than Jewish, but they want Jewish traditions. So most of my blog readers are actually Jewish young ladies who are marrying into a Jewish male, who are marrying into a Jewish family, and they want to know how they can not piss off their in-laws. So, I mean, that's the truth. To answer your question, being that my education on non-Jewish or interfaith weddings is somewhat small, but I know that everyone who ever goes to a Jewish wedding or works in a Jewish wedding as a creative partner, their first thing is, they're so fun. So that is true. They are what I call weekend affairs because not only is the wedding party or those involved in the wedding invited to what we don't call rehearsal dinner, but the dinner before the night before the wedding, which is typically a Friday night, would be considered a Shabbat dinner. And so pretty much all the out-of-towners, all the people in the wedding, kind of family, almost everyone is invited to that. And then you might have a hospitality room or a service where you have a honorary reading on that Saturday morning, and then Saturday night after Shabbat would be the wedding, and then a Sunday farewell brunch. And that's kind of the typical weekend. Obviously, everything I'm going to say, there's an exception to, because as the stereotype goes, it has its seeds in fact. Two Jews, three opinions. So, but the typical week, it is a whole wedding weekend. The wedding ceremony itself is quite short, and typically they're about a half hour, and the receptions are just a lot of fun. But there's lots of different traditions that are involved in a Jewish wedding. And then, of course, there's a few rules that you have to adhere to that would be different than non-Jewish weddings. The big one being the fact that you have a ketubah or a Hebrew wedding contract. It can also be Hebrew, English, or Aramaic, depending upon how you believe. And those are also very, very open. So you can find a ketubah that can serve an interfaith couple, a same-sex couple, or a very traditional couple who are what I would call Orthodox Jews. Even some that I would say are sort of based on the faith of Buddhism, but have Jewish ketubahs. So that's the biggest difference between a Jewish and a non-Jewish wedding, is that one piece of the ceremony, which takes place right before the actual wedding ceremony. And that's something that I think everybody who's involved in a Jewish wedding from a worker standpoint really needs to be very familiar with. Because if you're a venue, you need to make sure there's a space available for it. If you're the wedding planner, you need to make sure that you've got the right pin for it and that it's laid out properly. You also have to make sure it gets under the chuppah at the conclusion of the ketubah signing. And how is that going to happen? If you're the photographer, you have to know that photographs are in fact allowed. So let's make sure we have good lighting and good angles. And if you're the officiant, you have to know what is required to make it a kosher ketubah. And I'm not using kosher in air quotes. I mean that to make it a legal ketubah, there are some rules that the officiant needs to adhere to. So I really believe that's why educating yourself in this niche, if you're going to perform a wedding, or, and by perform, I mean work in any role in a wedding, a Jewish or interfaith wedding, you really need to know what you're getting yourself into to do it well.
I know when I did my very first Jewish wedding a bazillion years back, I got on the phone with the mother of the groom, and she was in New York, and we had about a 3-hour conversation because, you know, I have some Jewish friends, but they were kind of, well, we don't really know why they do that. Well, I have to know why. Why does the ketubah get moved and be under the chuppah? Why does it have to have this? And then I remembered the day that we were there and I saw the ketubah that they'd had created for them. It was the most beautiful piece I had ever seen. And I thought, why doesn't everybody get to have this? I mean, it was such a gorgeous piece of art, as well as being this legal document and a piece of what the whole religious character was of the whole event. And the other thing that was my biggest takeaway from my first Jewish wedding was that both sets of parents walked their children in. And I said, okay, I don't believe that the dad has to give away the bride or his daughter because, you know, we're adults here. We don't need to be given away. And that's pretty, like, goes back to, you know, King Arthur or something. But the fact that both families were celebrating and walking their children down the aisle was something that, as a planner, I offered to every couple after that wedding. Quite a few who took advantage of that because it seemed more friendly and more blending of the families and just everything. And I just thought that was such a heartfelt, and I know there's some tradition for it, but it was very heartfelt and it made the couples that I worked with feel very, very connected, and the families feel very, very connected.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite aspects too, is that both parents walk both the bride and groom, or both people of the couple, down the aisle. And maybe we're going to see more crossover, even now that, you know, Megan walked herself halfway down the aisle. So maybe that'll influence other weddings. But I agree, that's one of the best parts. When I was married, my husband's parents, his father was deceased and his mom was in a wheelchair. So he actually had both of his sisters escort him down the aisle, but still the same concept of all the family is involved in the wedding. And that comes from, really, if you think back to Fiddler on the Roof and the very first wedding scene, which is the traditional one, you can see that the whole community is a part of the wedding, and that's where the tradition comes from, so the whole party. And then, of course, the ketubah is typically, they get framed and they get hung in the couple's home. So they are pieces of art, and I learned the hard way how important it is to make sure that, you know, the venue doesn't put, like, have water service on the table, because if the table's wet, it can really do harm to the ketubah. So everything I teach other people is to not make the same mistakes that I made and learned the hard way.
There's always a lesson to be learned, no matter what you're doing, how it comes about.
Yes.
So one of the things that I'd like to talk about a little bit more is the marketing side that you have the knowledge in when it comes to really honing in on who your client is and who you want to work for and how to capture their attention online.
So I am a firm believer that you cannot be all things to all people, and that and I know you and I always talk about this, that your verbiage has to speak to who your client is. So in Jewish weddings / interfaith are no different. So do you have the right keywords that you're doing anything for? When you're posting some of your work, are you making sure that you've got a shot that shows that you know what you're doing with a Jewish wedding? And that could be me a chuppah, it could be the ketubah signing, it could be the smashing of the glass. It could be the framed ketubah, or if the couple had personalized kippot, they're usually set out or displayed in a very nice way. Could it be the wedding program that has Hebrew on it, or the invitation that has Hebrew? But something, when you're submitting your work or posting your own work, that shows that you understand the components and the traditions of a Jewish wedding. And then when you're posting those, are you tagging them correctly? Are you using the the correct English spellings of these Hebrew words so that when I, for a bride, or if I am the bride getting married and I'm going to go do a search, that your site comes up or that your work comes up. Also, we're a huge word of mouth community. And so I always tell vendors that to do outreach into the Jewish community and show that they want that business. So journalism and print advertising might be dying, but not in the Jewish community. The Jewish community has printed papers that in the Austin community, it still goes out once a month. In Denver, it still goes out once a month. In New York, it's a weekly thing. So that's a great place to show your expertise by submitting articles or advertising, still print advertising. But also, if you get a copy of that, you can see who are the leaders in the Jewish community and you can actually target your marketing to them. Also, again, here in Austin, and I've been to the one in Denver, and there's plenty to choose from in New York, there are what we call Simcha fairs, where you can actually, it's a quote-unquote bridal fair for Jewish couples, where you can specifically market to them. Also, if you choose to expand into the bar and bat mitzvah market, you get them early, and then you stay in the industry for 15 or 20 years, and you get to do their wedding, or you get to do their siblings, or their older cousins who are engaged come to the bar and bat mitzvah. So getting into bar and bat mitzvah is a great marketing tool to then do weddings, and it helps your business too. So that's another tip that I always give people.
And I think bar and bat mitzvahs are some of the most fun events I've ever done.
Absolutely. I like doing them more than weddings.
Well, me too, because they seem to be, kids are so excited about everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've had a few young ladies who maybe got a little temperamental, but mostly they're just so excited about any ideas you bring them. And there's a huge range of budgets, just like there are in weddings. But, you know, using your own creative mind and coming up with fun ideas. And you know, I love working with the boys because they want to do something sportsy or cars or something. And it always just a hoot. And the parents are usually very game for having a DJ, and you know, so there's a lot of referral to other people in the industry from the planner side, and because you got to have a great DJ and you got to have a photographer and some of those things. And I think, like you said, it's just a great piece of business, and it's certainly there, and people should be aware of it and try to market for it.
Yeah, and I have found also that, whereas with weddings, we fight, and sadly, we fight for why people need a planner. With bar and bat mitzvahs, I think maybe because the parents are so busy running around because the kids can't drive for themselves and they don't have time to be doing research on the internet because they're learning Hebrew and they're doing homework, that families for bar and bat mitzvahs seem more convincible to having a planner. Then sometimes even a wedding couple who's like, well, I want to do all the research and I'll get you for that day, which, you know, we all feel like doesn't really exist. I mean, that's just not realistic that you're going to be able to jump in on that day and be helpful to the couple.
Are you familiar with Eddie Babbage of Timeline Genius?
Yeah.
So he worked with Barbara Cohen of BLC Events here in Portland, and she helped him put together the Timeline Genius format for bar and bat mitzvahs. And so that was really exciting. And she says the same thing. She loves working on them as well. So, you know, it's just nice to have one of our members involved in something like that.
They're so fun. I think you get to be more creative and less stressed than for a wedding. So when I was a planner, I really tried to work exclusively on bar and bat mitzvah. Even though I would teach other people all about the Jewish wedding, I really loved planning mitzvahs. I think, Fresh, you've worked on a couple of mitzvahs with me, haven't you?
I may have helped you with a few. I know I've worked a couple haphazardly in the Austin market. Not as a direct planner, but either assisting on something or ending up, you know, behind the bar helping a family out that I happen to know. So they're definitely a lot of fun. One of the things that I wanted to switch over to was the Disney side of your current role back at Disney and talk a little bit more about what that is and what that opportunity looks like.
So I'm really, really excited to be working in sales again with Disney-related products. Well, actually with Disney products, but also then I am doing two different things. So I'm helping people plan their trips to Disney. And that's actually Disney World, Disneyland, and Disney Cruise Line, and a few other miscellaneous things that Disney offers in the vacation market. But I'm really, really excited about the consulting that I'm doing, and primarily with event vendors, just because that is the community I come from and that's the one that I know. Going in and helping them figure out what are the steps that they're using to have a full customer experience, and using the lessons that I learned while I worked in customer service, back then it was called customer service at Disney, and making sure that our wedding peeps and photographers and DJs and all of the people that we all work with are, that we're giving the best customer experience to one another as well as to our clients. And so that's been a lot of fun, and I'm very excited to speak about that. I'm calling it Lessons from the House of the Mouse at the upcoming NACE Experience Conference, and then doing consulting with vendors on that. So I've worked with a couple of photographers and a couple of planners, just going in and they tell me what their process is, and then I help them look at the full process. So both the onboarding, the middle process, or the lengthy we're working with you process, and then offboarding to make sure that you don't just decide, you know, okay, the event's over, thank you so much, that you end that on a positive note with a resell opportunity because you've done such a great job. And also getting, as I talked about in the Jewish business, we rely a lot on word of mouth referrals. So if your customer experience is everything that it can be, then you should be getting lots of referrals.
So Michelle, can you clarify for me? I got a little confused there. Are you actually selling travel or selling the travel package? Is that all put together?
Yes, and I can understand why you get confused. I need to work on my elevator speech. That's why I work with Megan, who you guys interviewed recently. I just got to listen to that podcast. So I am selling fabulous travel experiences to Disney so that you can go and experience that customer service or customer experience for yourself, and then I can help you integrate that into your business. Of course, you don't have to want to integrate it in your business to go have a great vacation. So I'm very lucky that I get to surround myself with Disney all day long, every day. It makes me happy. I always call it my happy place, which I need a lot of happy place.
Okay, so I like that idea of taking the customer experience model that you know so well and that you've worked in and that you've helped even emulate and create, not only in your own businesses, but within businesses you've worked for, and help companies explore how they can create their own unique magical touch, if you will.
Thank you.
And so maybe you could talk a little bit about a couple of the ways that somebody could stand out if they were just trying to look at what they have right now in front of them and there's something they could change.
Well, I think that one of the biggest things that we have to do is we have to set our expectations. Again, this is not just with clients, but with one another. I think we need to set the expectations at the outset of when we're working and when we're on the clock and when we're not. And the reason I say that is because if you get an email at 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon and you haven't set the expectation that you're not going to return that until after your weekend events, and maybe you're going to take Monday off to recover, so you're going to look at that email again on Tuesday, then anybody who's waiting to hear from you is going to be upset. And that could be alleviated right from the beginning when they are talking to you in a proposal, or when you're talking to your fellow creative partners about, hey, I have an event this weekend. I'm not going to be responding to emails and an out-of-office response. I will get back to you on Tuesday, unless it's your wedding weekend or your bar and bat mitzvah weekend, or, you know, in which case, then there should probably be another way to reach you, and that should be delineated so that you're not having to split your concentration and check and respond to emails right away, because you need to be 100% focused on the client who's in front of you at that time. And that is the biggest mistake that I think we all make, especially when we're new to this industry, because we are used to, when someone says jump, we are used to saying how high. And so it's so hard when you work off of your phone 24/7, like you do, Fresh, to put that away and be like, you know what, I'm going to focus 100% on who's in front of me, and that response can wait, but I don't have to stress about it because they already know that that response is going to wait. And while I can teach you that you should do that, there are other people out there who do great things about setting up those processes so that they're all automated for you. So that is always the very first thing, that when I go in and consult with someone, I ask what their processes are, and then I tell them what they can be, and then I refer them to someone who actually does the heavy lifting about putting them in place. Because, you know, so it makes it an automated thing, so you don't have to worry about it.
Well, setting client expectations right up front, even before they reach out to you, if it's on your website and, you know, maybe you write a few posts about things like that. It's so important because today people do expect immediate response. We recently had a DJ reach out to me, and he'd gotten a request from the bride, and she had a couple questions, and he said, I had to check my calendar, and he said, do a couple things, and I got back to her in less than 40 minutes, and she said, oh, too late, my mother already hired someone. It's like, wait a minute, you know, are you doing any research? So, and it's hardly fair to the professional, because they're working too, you know, they can't just drop everything. So it is tough if you don't have those expectations clearly defined, readily available for people to see, and then some other way for them to, if they send a phone call or a text or an email, hardly many of those anymore, but if they do, that you have some auto-respond that can say, gosh, it'll be just a few minutes or might be 24 hours.
Right. Yeah. And so that, I think, is the first step in an onboarding process that makes for a good customer experience, or if you want to call it customer service. I like experience because I think that carries through all the way.
I will say, from my own personal use, I've been trying to figure out what that time blocking or time management looks like so that I can walk away from my phone on the weekends or when I'm not working. It has been a challenge. I do live and work off of my phone. It manages everything. So understanding that some of these apps are only during certain times or that I need to limit them is not only something I want to do personally, but I would love to also do professionally so that people understand I would like some downtime. Because that's another thing, as professionals, I don't think we always, or especially small business owners, we don't take the time for ourselves. And we don't take the downtime that we need to recharge.
Right. Which, you know, the old saying, you know, you have to put your oxygen mask on first. So let's play that through. If you're not taking care of yourself, you're really not going to be taking care of your clients, especially in this industry, which has just become ranked as, we used to be the 10th and now we're the 5th highest stress job in the country. And that article just came out last week. And so let's say you have a full weekend of wedding events, a Friday night or a rehearsal dinner followed by a wedding and then a wedding send off. you can't be at your best if you're not getting enough rest. And if you're coming home on Saturday at 2 a.m. and looking at an inbox full of emails, you're just going to be stressed. You're not going to get your rest. And then you're going to go to collect the tux and the wedding dress and everything else on Sunday morning. And the wrong person's going to ask you a question and you're going to snap. I say that as an example, but I think we've all witnessed that especially in new people coming into this industry, in interns maybe who don't understand that it's not all fluff and frill and their first weekend working with you, and they don't take care of themselves. And that, in addition to my customer experience, that's really kind of what I want to call my new platform, is making sure that we're all doing everything we can to protect our mental health. I'm saddened to see what an epidemic anxiety and depression and what that leads to has become.
And it's something that starts at the top in the regards of small business owners. The rates of it seem to be increasing amongst those because there aren't resources. We're not talking about it. When you're in a business environment, it's go, go, go. It's, oh, how are you doing? Are you successful? Are you busy? And that doesn't translate to having an open conversation.
Yeah, I was really touched and also very surprised when the week that we had two very high profile celebrity suicides, and Kate Spade, who is my spirit animal, and Anthony Bourdain, both in that same week, I it's very hard for me to say I was suicidal, because in my mind, I was only processing it as I just wanted to go to sleep and I wanted to wake up and not feel any pain. But when you take the wrong number of sleeping pills, it is a suicide attempt. And I posted about that experience on Facebook, and I could not believe the number of fellow people in this industry, because I'm very lucky that I know so many people all around the world in this industry because of my travel and conventions attendance, at how many people have a firsthand knowledge or have a close family member who have experienced this. And I saw that article about how event planners are like the fifth most stressful job in the world, but then when I think about all the people who have to work with us, the photographers and the DJs and all the other people that we work with, and that our stress is surely seeping onto them because we put so much pressure on ourselves because we know that celebrations and these events are once in a lifetime things that these people are going to experience, and we need to be perfect for them. And that's just a lot of pressure to live with. And again, you're absolutely right, Jason, that as a small business owner, it's hard to take downtime. You have to, if you schedule that vacation time for between Christmas and New Year's, and we've had a busy December planning holiday parties, and you're like, I'm going to be off. And then all of a sudden a wedding drops into your lap for Christmas Day. How are you? I mean, that's money in your pocket. It's hard to be like, you know what? I'm better off not taking that event. So we have to figure it out. And I think the first step is talking about it. I'm not sure that I have any solutions, but I want it to be something that we feel like we can talk about in an open situation and not feel shame around, because I definitely felt shame around what was happening to me. And it was really hard for me to open up about. And then having done so, I am so grateful and so happy that I took that step.
Well, and it was very brave of you, because oftentimes people don't want to share any negative thing about themselves, or, there's so much out there in the social media world of how fabulous we are. We're so busy. We're so this, we've got so many events, and so much of it is just plain BS when you dig into there a little bit. And you know, getting time for yourself as a small business owner has always been, you know, Jason really hit that. It's just so hard. But I, all the gals that I taught coming up the ranks and all the times that I have spoken, I really encourage people that you have to put date night on your calendar. You have to put your kids' best activities on your calendar. I don't think that anybody should put off going to get their mammogram or their annual physical because they've got to meet with a bride. I have had people cancel coming to an event because the bride is going to be in town and she wants to meet at 6 p.m. tonight. Well, you know what? If she's in town at 6 p.m., she'll be here at 9 a.m. in the morning. So meet her for breakfast. I think that if we put the appointment in our calendar and then we say, I'm sorry, I'm already booked, but I can do 8 a.m. or 10 a.m. or I can meet you for lunch. They're not going to think anything about that. But when we always kowtow down and say, oh, sure, I'll just move things around. I got that figured out quite early in my planning career that I could not do that because otherwise I never saw my spouse. I never saw my kid. You know, somebody needed a grocery shop. You have to take care of yourself to be able to give the best client experience that we can. So, and if you ever want somebody to talk to, give me a ring.
Thank you. Amen. I mean, you said that very well. And I appreciate what you said about me being brave because, you know, when you swallow a bunch of sleeping pills, that's actually not very courageous at all. So I was grateful for the chance to get to talk about it and for the amount of support that I have had since then has been, you know, I, like I said, I don't know that I have 100% of the answers, but I'm glad that we're at least starting to broach that conversation in an open way.
One, I think just starting the conversation brings about ideas and solutions, but that there's never going to be a one size fits all. And we're maybe one day it will all be figured out, but I don't have hopes for that because then it would be kind of boring. At the end of the day, there'd be a boring factor to life if it was all kind of figured out, but we need to set up the spaces to have those conversations and be open and honest about them and not be afraid to say, hey, I'm having some struggles right now. Is anybody else experiencing this? I mean, even figuring out anonymous opportunities so people can not feel, if they don't have the courage or the bravery inside of them, you know, somewhere to outlet that outlet, somewhere to let out.
Yeah. I mean, again, we look at the people in high profile who jobs that or names Kate and Anthony who committed suicide. And, you know, before that would have happened, I would have looked at them and thought they had everything and they had it together and they had these very successful lives. I mean, Anthony Bourdain got to see the world and eat his way through the world. It seems like the kind of thing that I aspired to in my life. And then to know that he was in such pain, it was very eye-opening for sure to realize that none of us, even the people that we think do, really have all the answers to everything. And ultimately, we really are all in this together. And so, again, I tie it back, even though maybe mental health isn't, you wouldn't think that it has to do with customer experience, but I really think that it ties back because if you're going to be a business that gives excellent customer service, you have to take care of yourself first, but you get back what you put out into the universe. And then also we have to treat our fellow vendors the way that we want to be treated. And so I think that involves treating and respecting everyone's personal boundaries. And just like Sherry just offered me the chance to call her and talk to her, I think we need to be there for one another and a community, which of course is what you do with Wedding Network, is you have a community of people that you can go to when you don't have all the answers. And ultimately that's what it's all about.
And we never have all the answers, Michelle. Ever, you know, to any topic, do we? Well, I want to deviate away from this topic a little bit because one of the things that was interesting to me, and I love to ask people these questions, is, you know, what's something I wouldn't know about you? And I've had some really terrifying things told to me, some things that are funny or serious or whatever. But your response on your podcast form really tickled me, and I really want to know why, because you said you've been in every state, all 50 states. What are you doing?
Well, so I'm an only child. So my parents, God, I can't believe this because I just said that Kate Spade is my spirit animal. My parents loved when I was a kid to backpack. So I traveled on their back, literally. That was before there were, you know, front carriers. So I was on their back in a backpack traveling through the Continental Divide with them as a child. So I got to knock off several states there. They're also big history buffs. So I got to knock off the East Coast when we went through our historical tour of, we started in New Orleans with the antebellum mansions in the South and went all the way up to Newport, Rhode Island, where in Plymouth Rock, and then back down. And we ended at Disney, I just have to say, as an aside. But then, because I've worked in every part of customer service that there is, and when I'm giving a bio, I don't really have time to tell you all the places, but I worked for the airlines for about 2 years. So it was just a goal that I was like, I've got to do it. So I traveled everywhere except Alaska. It was the one state I hadn't gotten to. And so when I got married, that was just a no-brainer for me, was we're going on an Alaska cruise for our honeymoon. And I rarely will go back to someplace I've already been, just because I haven't traveled as much internationally as I would like to. And so I'm always looking for the next great vacation. But that Alaska cruise was something I would do again in a heartbeat, because it is truly God's country. It is the last place on the United States that we have not truly overdeveloped. I mean, it was so beautiful and so peaceful, and it wasn't hot. I mean, it was a summer of 50 degree weather. It was fabulous. So I do frequently go back to Disney and also Las Vegas, which I think is Disney for adults. And so those are places that I travel back to frequently, but I'm always looking for someplace new to visit. I love to travel.
I also like finding new places to travel.
Yes, you do.
And I forced myself when I went to Europe last summer not to repeat anything. The few places that I did go to the first time around, I forced myself, as much as I wanted to go eat my way through Italy again, I forced myself not to go. And I'm glad I did. I found Eastern Europe. I found Albania. I found Budapest. And it was beautiful.
I had family that went to Budapest earlier this summer. So that's definitely on the bucket list. Yeah, Jace, if I could have gone with you on that kind of lifestyle, man, I think I admire you. I think that was great what you did. And I think opening eyes to different cultures and communities and food and wine and all the things that you learn by traveling and seeing the world can only help you in the event industry, because it opens your eyes to new things, to new architecture, to creativity. I mean, how fun would it be to bring that Italian wine back to an event and have just an amazing experience at a rehearsal dinner doing wine pairings? I mean, that's just something that you only learn, I think, by truly getting to immerse yourself in the experience.
And even another aspect of travel, backtracking to the mental health, you know, just traveling and getting out and going somewhere different and having a new environment surround you is a great way to recharge yourself and to give you some of that life and that energy that you're looking for, so that you're not stuck in a rut.
And it's hard to have your cell phone when you're overseas.
It was. I had a SIM card in an old iPhone.
You did.
I did, but I only had like 2 gigs of data, and I normally go through 10 a month. So I really had to like scale back. But it was during the summer that I really took that time to like actually look up.
It's also, it was, It's also how you can learn a lot about customer service, because airlines are, and definitely TSA screeners, they're not really good at it. And for me, I mean, just a simple thing like how the queue is set up. Like if you're a convention or corporate business planner, like you can learn a lot about how to set up that registration queue from how badly airlines do it.
There, yeah, and there, you never know where inspiration sparks or where an idea comes from.
Yeah.
So as we wrap up here, Michelle, is there anything else you want to touch on?
Well, when I asked if I could come on and visit with you guys for a podcast, I wanted to make sure that I alert your listeners to know that if they are interested in finding out how to incorporate my services or learning more about either Jewish weddings and how to market to them or a customer experience, that anybody who mentions that they're members of Wedding Network, I will definitely, you know, work out a discount program for that and special pricing. And I, of course, want to say thank you again for having me and for letting me be true to myself and talk about everything and touch on my whole life.
No, we definitely loved having you here, and we'll add all the information to contact you in the show notes. So we can figure that out. And before we post this, we'll have all that. And yes, we are thrilled that you were able to come on and share your experience.
I want to say thanks too, because it's always refreshing to talk to people who talk from their heart and who live the way that they talk. We have a lot of posers in this industry, I guess that maybe is the good term, that are not true to themselves. And I think that ultimately they fail because you can't live life that way. But I think that, you know, talking with people like you and other people that Jason and I have had the pleasure of chatting with in these podcasts, and we found some really down-to-earth home people that are smart business people, and they're true to their values, and it's just a joy to meet another one and get to chat with you today. So thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you very much. It was really fun for me. So
good.
All right. Well, that concludes another episode of the Wedding Network podcast. Be sure to tune in to the next one that Sheree and I put in the hot seat. Until next time, bye everyone.